Hello and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and I'm joined once again by Tristan Vick. How are you doing, Tristan?
I'm doing all right. My daughter tried to puke, but I convinced her otherwise.
That's right. Use your powers of persuasion. You shall not puke.
I can control a 3.5-year-old like 60% of the time. So
60% of the time,
yeah,
every time.
That's right.
So as you may have noticed, we haven't had a show for the past couple weeks. We've had a work show come up, and then last week we were actually we missed the Atlanta game here in town
because we were in Russia. We were doing this tournament thing, and we had our last thing today, and just didn't end well. So we're back home now.
No, we were actually on the beach getting sun poisoning and stuff like that. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time today talking about individual games because we honestly didn't get to see whole games. We saw, I think I saw most of the Real Salt Lake game, and we kind of saw pixels of the Atlanta game, but we hear it was exciting. So today we're going to talk about, what's kind of like the big picture right now in FC Dallas world, and maybe do a little transfer talk. So Tristan, what all have we missed since we last were at the microphone?
Yeah, so it's been not too topsy-turvy, but we are sitting clear and clear as day at the top of the Western Conference standings. So we've had some good wins. We've had a couple of defeats. We got knocked out of the Open Cup, which is a blessing in disguise. We took a beating from the Red Bulls, which that's fine because I think we weren't really going for that one. And then we got a point or 3 points away at Minnesota, which is awesome because away points are always good points. Another 4th of July thriller. Last year, if fans will remember, we beat, at the time, the top of the league leaders, Toronto FC, quite decisively on Independence Day. And this year, it was a very dramatic 86th and 88th minute winner, or equalizer and winner, respectively, from Mr. Tesho, which was pretty awesome for that guy. And
the
awesome
Canadian
for us.
Save the day on American Independence.
Exactly.
Day.
You know what? Hey, man, when it happened 200 whatever odd years ago, we had to have the French help us out and the Germans. So it's not a bad thing to have the Canadians every now and then bail you out. So
that was very polite of him to do that for us.
Oh, I can't thank him enough. And then we played Real Salt Lake, and they kind of wiped the floor with us. But we got to see, Kellen got some good minutes. And based on the interviews with Oscar Pereja, he was pretty pleased with some of the things he's seen from Kellen. The team's shape will be changing, and we've kind of seen some hints at how that will be over the past few games. And so we'll get into some of that here in a little bit, but it's been quite the month or so as far as everything goes. I mean, the World Cup's going on, so there's obviously that, but we don't have any players affected by that. So I'm assuming that the only thing that people are watching as far as the World Cup goes is just the matches for fun. So not too worried.
Yeah. So you brought up Kellen Acosta. Let's start there. I was watching the Real Salt Lake game. And that first half, he did not look comfortable out there at all. He looked kind of lost and just sluggish. I don't know whether the altitude got to him or what, but I think Buzz Carrick was saying that he looked really sharp in training and really, really into it. But then you get to the game that first half, and he just didn't look into it. And then that second half was much better, but by the end, he was visibly gassed, huffing and puffing, and then like people would just try to go around him, and I'm surprised he didn't get a yellow card the number of times he pulled people back as they passed him. So it'd be nice to see Kellen gets, I mean, if he's going to get some more minutes and he's going to be a part of the team going forward, more often. I'd like to see his fitness kind of get back in shape. People were wondering if he's injured or if there's something going on there. It looks like he just needs to get back in match shape consistently. And, hopefully that second half is the catalyst that gets him back into, the old Kellen that we used to know.
I think that what the issue with Kellen Acosta is that we don't really know still at this point what his best role is for this team. And that's what I think is a little bit worrying for his development is he doesn't maybe feel, I don't think he necessarily feels like his role for this team is the same as what his role would be for the long-term future as on the U.S. national team. And that might be a little bit scary. I don't think he wants to be designated as kind of the next Michael Bradley or whatever, which I don't know why you would have a problem with that, because I think Weston McKennie is going to get that spot. But I think that Kellen needs to talk to Oscar and kind of decide which spot does he feel like he's better. Is he better as being a little bit more of a free midfielder that's more box to box, or is he going to be kind of like a Guerrero and a defensive midfielder that kind of is just swallowing things up? I think Kellen can be very physical doing box to box work, but as long as he works on his positioning, he doesn't have to, as you said, huff and puff up and down the field.
Right.
And so that's where I think he would really excel.
I think that's where he wants to excel too. I think we saw that interview he did with, was it Men in Blazers?
Mm-hmm.
The guy asked him, who do you think best describes how you play or how you want to play? And his answer was Blaise Matuidi. So, I can see more of that box to box, being where he's going, but that's position for FC Dallas this year has been rotated heavily. We've seen the people playing more defensive roles switch over to playing the box to box. And I mean, it's just kind of been a revolving door in that box to box role for FC Dallas this season.
Yep. I agree.
So, one of the positions, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about, positions that we don't have people for. And one of those would be left back, which is actually we do have people for now. We just signed Marquinhos Pedroso. And we were kind of sitting there with Hollingshead and Figueroa and Reeves kind of rotating in on that spot. Now looks like we'll have a week or two more of that depending upon visas. And then Pedroso will start slotting in there. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on in the show with Harrison Crow from American Soccer Analysis. But let's talk a little bit about Pedroso. Tristan, are you happy to have a specialist left back here to fill in Anton Nedeljkovic's spot?
As long as he exceeds my expectations.
As long as he's good, yeah.
Yeah, it's... I mean... I don't really want to shake up the backline very much. And so that's why I would be hesitant if we were not signing a player that can't fit in well. He's a pretty traveled player, which gives me some pause. I haven't watched any highlights of him, so I have no idea how technically good he is. But yeah, I've read the reports.
I have, so I can speak to that here in a bit.
Yeah, I've read the reports from the third degree folks and some other people, and he seems like a solid player. But what I would be hesitant to say is that we're not going to see him get bedded in gently. We have, let me look at our, I don't have our matches pulled up, but oh yeah, Chicago this weekend, which meh. Got our first Houston Derby and then Sporting KC. So we've got some important matches coming up. And I think that it would be wise to maybe bet him in slowly. But
bring him on as a sub or something.
Yeah. And then see how the connection is between him and the left-sided center backs. I think Ziegler plays over there, so
yeah, and Pedroso is a dual citizen with Italy, so I assume he knows Italian, and I'm pretty sure that that's one of Ziegler's 18 languages that he speaks, and so hey, that could be a good thing.
Right, that would be solid. I think that FC Dallas is good with the four at the back, and is barring no changes as far as the defense or goalkeepers, I think the four at the back, we've shown we kind of have, we probably, I'm comfortable saying we have the best defense in MLS. It's not up for debate in my opinion. We may not have the best players at every position, but as a cohesive unit, that defense has played really well. So when you bring in someone new for that to a position that already has been kind of rotated in and out as we've tried to get over Nedyakov, then there's not a whole lot to worry about, in my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, so I have seen some of the highlight videos, and I think what stood out to me the most was his decision-making and his ability to kind of know when to pinch on a pass and cut it off, and when to kind of back off and get ready to run with a player as they get the ball. So I think there were some offensive highlights in the clips that I saw, but really that's what kind of stood out to me. And I think that, you know, as we've seen with Reggie Cannon on the right, like that decision-making can make or break the stability of the back line, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's tough to judge it before he gets some real game situations with the rest of the back line. But I think if fans want to know whether or not it's going to be a good pick or it's going to work out, let's see if he starts in the next couple of matches, assuming he gets his the visa through. But if he does, I would look to see if he starts or not. But also I would look to see how attacking he is. Do we start to keep working down that left-sided flank? Do we shift more towards the right? Does mm-hmm. yep. a team like Chicago really hammer down the left or down their right on our left to kind of expose him if they can? I think that's when you'll really know how good he is if he becomes someone that gets exposed easily and targeted, mm-hmm. or if he kind of handles himself quite well. So,
yeah, looking forward to seeing that. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the other big story of since we've last been at the microphone. Mauro Diaz has been sold.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure other sources have talked this one out a lot.
I think this is the Hunt saying we can get good money for this guy right now. He's playing well. He's not been injured in almost 2 years. Let's sell him and get a good return on our value. And I have absolutely no problem with that. We have had a really strong midfield. Even in matches where Mauro hasn't played, we've still looked really well, really good. So I think it's great business. But I think it's phase one of a two-step process. Mm-hmm. We need to get it doesn't have to be a $20 million signing, but Christian Coleman is not working out. And
man, I wanted him to work out so bad.
It's fine to want that still, but you need someone that comes in that gels well with the rest of the team. And
we need a target man that Rudy can play off of, and so we can get the strength. Like, you know who I would envision playing up front in a 4-4-2 with Rudy is it Fernando Adi? Like, I think that would be awesome, but obviously it's probably not going to happen. But
yeah, I mean, I think we need somebody big. I think we need somebody who is proven goal scorer that has been able to succeed on multiple teams or at least do well in other teams. I mean, Coleman, oy vey. I mean, he just, nothing against Coleman in terms of him being a good teammate or anything of that sort, but he just doesn't get it done. And the biggest issue I have with him is we're not able to rely on him. And so when you start him, you have this hope in the back of your head that says, oh, maybe he'll get a goal. And that's just really not the like attitude that you want to have when it comes to your strikers. And for a team like FC Dallas with no Mauro Diaz, I think we're going to be a little bit more of a direct route team, kind of how we used to play off of Fabian Castillo. We weren't super direct, but we were very reliant on using the pace of Castillo and Barrios to draw out the defense and spread it out. And then throwing balls into the middle, we would have guys like Blas Perez and Arruti that could work off that. Now, without a striker in there, I'd be very worried about our ability to go far in the playoffs. So the question becomes, A, who should we be looking after? And B, because this happens so often, I feel like, with FC Dallas, will the coaching staff and the scouting staff and the technical directors and Clavio and those other guys who make the decisions actually find something that can work in a mid-season year? I think they can. I don't know if they will. I think there are some players down in South America, which is where I would look, but the past few signings we've made have been players from like Eastern Europe and strange, random, like this. I think Marquinhos is from, played the second division of Hungary or something. I mean, like just a really obscure club. And so,
Mosquera played for, was it Independiente?
Yeah, and so that's what I would look for, is that you're gonna have something like that. Now, I think you're gonna have something in Argentina. I think it would be smart to look there. You could even go as far as looking at some of the bigger clubs down in Argentina, like Boca or River, and looking for something there.
Santiago, correction on myself, Santiago played for Millonarios.
Yeah, the Colombian team. And so, yeah, and so there were a couple people that I found that offered that. They're going to cost some money. We should be prepared to pay said money, because I think that's one thing that our team kind of needs, is a little bit of a, not necessarily a spark, but just the ability to rely on those types of target men strikers that we're able to knock things down to for our midfield to run onto. I would be interested to track where we're starting our chances or where our shots come from over the next few matches versus where our shots came from when we had Diaz in the team. Diaz is so good at unlocking defenses, and so now we need somebody to fill that role. And so we'll see how that happens. But
yeah. So yeah, do we look internal to do that with Paxton or Santiago Mosquera? Or do we bring in someone in? I've read that we're actually looking to bring someone in for both positions, both the striker and the vacated attacking midfield. So it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it's actually kind of unknown, so should be fun.
All right, well, I think that's it for this section here. Stay tuned after the little musical break for my discussion with Harrison Crowe about our left back situation and the numbers behind it and a little interesting tidbits there, and we'll see you on the other side.
The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage.
Hey, Harrison, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Dustin.
All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, how you're involved in the soccer community, and all that stuff.
Yeah, so presently I am an analyst for American Soccer Analysis. Write all kind of all over the place right now, Washington Post, a few other odds and ends. Basically, myself, Matthias Kulwatz, as well as Drew Olson, and now Kevin Mikas kind of run AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com. We kind of started seeing all these fancy stats, and we wanted to help kind of push them forward. So that's kind of what we've spent the better part of almost 5 years now doing.
Nice. Yeah, Kevin's been a guest on our show, and it's super interesting to me. I'm a programmer, and so I've submitted an article to you guys before. So
yeah, it was really good.
Well, thanks. You have to say that because you're on my show.
I suppose so.
So we wanted to have you on today just because you were involved in kind of a discussion that got involved on Twitter. It got started on Twitter about FC Dallas's left back situation. We had Anton Nedeljkov, and we sold him. And then in the interim, we had Ryan Hollingshead and Maynard Figueroa kind of filling in and alternating between the two of them. And I think was it Steve Finn that kind of posed the question of like, well, which one of these players is actually best for FC Dallas, like what statistically?
Yeah.
And so you kind of stepped in and looked at the numbers. And what did you find when you were looking at those numbers?
Yeah. So, first of all, I kind of took a look at a lot of different things, right? We looked at expected goal numbers, what they're contributing to the attack. And then we also, I took a look at what the expected goals against of the team was from open play when they started. Obviously, it's a little bit hard to divorce that, so to speak, just because you kind of have some overlap. So you can't necessarily say that this player was directly a result of a high expected goals against or a low. But obviously, being that there's they kind of shared left back a little bit over the last couple seasons, the hope was that there'd be, you know, some differences between the two. And then I also looked at their passing and then what they did to kind of turn possession over, right? Defensive actions, if you will. So I also looked at that. And a good way of kind of measuring defensive actions isn't necessarily counting how many defensive actions they have. It's taking into account kind of a weighted way of looking at it, putting things kind of on a level so that everybody it can be compared to one another. And what I did to do that is I looked at opposing passes and how many different passes are occurring in on average in a given game. So how many times, how many opportunities basically they have to create a change of possession. So from there, I kind of did also a litmus test. I kind of took a sampling of some of the quote unquote best left backs right now going on in MLS. So Kamar Lawrence, Justin Morrow, Milton. There's the left back for Columbus Crew, and the name is escaping me. But basically, kind of created a baseline for all those for those three players, and then kind of compared them next to Maynard Figueroa as well as Ryan Hollingshead. And the real thing that we're trying to find out is who's best suited to that role and right. that position. But then the kind of the result was they both have pluses and minuses, which is really, I guess, anticlimactic in a finding sort of way.
Yeah.
So Maynard Figueroa definitely is, I shouldn't say definitely, he's not definitively, but he shows better passing skills basically, though he does try less riskier passes, his profile would tell us. He keeps possession going, and through that he's managed to help build the attack through keeping possession. He's pretty sturdy in terms of getting defensive actions. He's consistent in what he wins. He's not necessarily great. He's probably on the low end of his success when he goes in for defensive action. Mm-hmm. But that being said, he is one of the more prominent members of Dallas's defensive core when it comes to him playing. He contributes to about nearly 12%, 13% of the team's defensive actions, which when we're talking about what a left back does in that specific role within Oscar Pereira's tactics, you know, it's a little bit of defensive, it's a little bit of attack, and it's a little bit of possession. So that kind of came out as a wash. You know, it wasn't bad necessarily, but it wasn't great either.
Gotcha.
Ryan Hollingshead on the other side was much more... his presence was much more clear, right?
Right.
He was way more successful in his tackles. He was just as prominent within the defensive actions. But then on the other side, he contributed more to the attacking presence with expected goals and with expected assists, and less so on the expected buildups, as you kind of imagine. And his expected goal chain, which is basically whether or not he was a part of a passing sequence leading to a successful possession. And we define successful possession as just basically culminating in a shot. It was more prominent than what Figueroa's was. So what we see from Hollingshead is just that he was a little bit more attacking minded. And while he wasn't necessarily as good of a, has as good of a passing skill, he was winning possession a little bit more frequently. And the team ultimately looked a little bit better defensively with him in place.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that you can tell all that through just looking at numbers. I would say that, you know, that kind of seems to pass the eye test. You know, I think somebody mentioned that, you know, Pereja likes to play each one of them in different situations. And, you know, Ryan's a little faster than Minor. And we've seen that in the past couple of games where Minor's just kind of gotten burned a little bit because he's not as pacey and he struggles with pacey wingers. But I would say that for me, like that, what you're saying lines up with what I would see whenever I watch. So, I know you're a little bit of a Ryan Hollingshead fan.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
tell me a little bit about how you became a Ryan Hollingshead fan.
I mean, it's just seeing him play a couple times and then digging through the numbers. I have an affinity for guys that kind of sit on the bench, but are really good players, especially in MLS. You don't, I suppose we're kind of starting to trend in the TAM era that there are getting to be a little bit deeper benches. Mm-hmm. But Hollingshead for the last few years has been really good. And it's been more of circumstances that's kind of prevent him from starting, but he's someone that I constantly do monitor, that I actively like to watch. I think he's makes a lot of really good decisions on the ball, is one observation, but then physically he's also very capable to keep up with some of the maybe not elite speed, but he's above average speed. And so I think he's someone that could probably play a lot of different positions, and so I understand why he's kind of kept around for that circumstance and that situation to kind of leverage his those tools.
Yeah, Pereja loves himself a utility player.
Yeah, well, as we all do, right? Like there's some affinity on some level for all of us that love a utility player. You know, Rich Amaral still stands out to me as a great Seattle Mariner because, you know, playing second base and outfield. But Ryan Hollingshead is someone that I feel and really honestly, I felt when he came up and made the transition, he took a year off to help his brother build churches, if I recall correctly, after being drafted, which humanitarian wise, like that just, you know, kind of leaves you a little special place in your heart. Yeah. Like this is a good guy.
He's all and kinds then on top of that, good guy story. Like he's got that. And then he had the good, he was being a good Samaritan and got hit by a car. And
right. Oh,
so hey,
except for the man bun, that we do need to address that.
You know, but besides the man bun was before I became a fan, so I don't have to live with that memory.
Fair enough. But yeah, he's a really dynamic player that I think could start with for several teams, and especially when you start looking at it's a little bit tough because from a commercial perspective, I don't have someone looking at my salary and saying Harrison Crow's not worth, you know, X amount of dollars. I'm a network engineer. I understand that aspect, but from the other side of it is MLS is a cap system and you can only spend so much money. And so guys like Ryan Hollingshead, guys like Will Bruin that I have an affinity for, they are of immense value because they're paid a little bit less than what they bring to the table. And when you think about Maynard Figueroa, who basically is being paid twice what Hollingshead is to do basically the same job and fill the same minutes, and he's 8 years older, it doesn't necessarily, especially for a team that I don't want to say cap strapped, because that brings the wrong image. But finance is something that's always seems to kind of swirl around this team,
right.
Rightfully or wrongfully so.
Maybe not necessarily the cap.
So it's just about
unofficial spending limits.
Right, exactly. And every team has that, right? Like, yep. Reality speaking, outside of maybe Atlanta, NYC, and maybe Toronto, definitely. Outside of those three, I think there's true spending limits for every team. And I think that...
Which is responsible.
Yeah. You got to be a good steward of the resources that you're given. And that's part of the cap. And I think that when you look at this roster that... that they've put together, there's some overlap, and I kind of don't understand necessarily, especially with Chris Reeves, that USL team looks to be. Is it a year off? 2 years off?
I'm hearing 2019. So next
that,
year.
And that would be great, but I mean, Reeves is pushing for first team minutes now. He already had a start this past weekend, so. Now you, and from my understanding is you guys have signed a fourth left back. You guys have this, is that going to be a running joke? Are you guys going to be the left back team? You know, you have the wingers for Colorado and Minnesota. You guys can be the left back team.
Well, so I would push back on that just a little bit. None of them are like quote unquote specialist left backs, except for the new guy, Marquinho Pedroso. Minor actually is, I think he's, you know, whenever I've watched him, I've much preferred him as a backup center back. And Hollingshead is being used as a left back right now, but he's also been used as a winger and midfield. And when we brought in Nedeljkov over the winter, basically the rationale was, okay, Pareja came out and said, okay, we're going to rebuild this team. The era of this particular playing group is done, and we're going to start anew. And I'm going to start by making a new back line. And I'm going to start. And so he went out and he got Reto Ziegler and Nedeljkov, and then he brought up Reggie Cannon is getting first team minutes now. He really wanted to make a defensive core that's going to last for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You know, they're young. I think the oldest one is Hedges, and you know, he's the anchor of them all. And then maybe Ziegler's older.
I think it's really close between the two.
Anyways, they'll be able to last 3 or 4 years, and that will push us into the new, you know, and so far it's worked out really well, that having one of the best defenses in the league. And, I think we didn't allow a goal for like 3 or 4 games. granted, we didn't play the greatest of teams, but we'll brush that part aside.
You win the games that you're given, right? Like, I'm not a big fan of saying, well, we didn't beat a good team. We beat a bad team. Well, you beat a team. And yep, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what you just said in front of you. And if you can only beat the teams that are in front of you, that's all you can do.
Yeah, completely agree. I think that when they're looking at that back line and they're saying, all right, well, what do we need here? Like, we've got a new right back. We've got a new center backs pairing. I don't think that they wanted, like, I think, was it, I forget who said it on Twitter, maybe Pete Welpton. You know, we've got Reggie Cannon on the right. We've got enough development there. We don't want to have to develop a right back and a left back, you know? So, I feel like having a specialist left back who is, who's vetted, who's been around the block a little bit, who's not trying to figure out how to play the position, is going to be really good for the defensive core unit. What say you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I get the idea of, especially with a young player, right? A young player needs time, even if they know the position, they need time to, especially like when you talk about a new player entering the NFL. I mean, quarterbacks all the time, the biggest thing they talk about is the speed of the game, right? And decision making. Mm-hmm. And I think that you see that even in MLS. I think decision making, I talked about it with Hollingshead. I really liked his decision making. And there's several different players that I could point to that say, you know, they have really good decision making at times. A Rudy would not be one of them. but with that, you know, that's always the curse of bringing up a young player and developing a young player. I don't think there's anything wrong with developing two players at one time on opposite sides. I think what you kind of want to do is maybe minimize that. I get maybe not playing Reeves so much and kind of minimizing his involvement, but having a left back by committee when you have three viable candidates, and I think Oscar Pereja so far has done a pretty good job since Anton left the team. And I think that that's really, to me, I think that's the best choice, especially with, and hear me on all level. I really think your guys' biggest weakness right now is probably in the attack. And with trying to fill that gap that your special unicorn, you know, I know you guys are burning incense and vigil, you know, having nightly candlelight vigils, but, you know, have to replace them eventually.
We are all vigorously searching through Football Manager, trying to find the perfect replacement for us.
Oh, I'm sure. And look, you know, he was a great player. I sent you a DM earlier noting that he was on the top of our expected goal chain lists right now. Like, he was just a phenomenal player. And you know, anytime you have a really good player, not just leave your team, but leave your team a little unexpected. And especially in the middle of the season when, you know, Dallas, what, you guys are sitting top of the table in the West?
Currently, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, for me, if you're going to spend dollars, like that's, if you're going to spend dollars, if you're going to spend cap, that's where I would spend it. Especially if you're talking about maybe changing your formation. And it looks like Oscar Pereja is kind of leaning towards that. Maybe I'm reading tea leaves wrong.
Yeah. And this is something that Tristan and I talked about earlier in the episode, with what we kind of need and, where we're, what positions we want to go for and in the transfer market. And it looks as if, you know, Pereja's leaning kind of towards that 4-4-2 with getting a solid, like,
I think it's the true, like a true nine to kind of take the place of a Rudy, right?
Yes. Thank you. Yes. And trying to get a true nine letting, Rudy kind of play off of him and go be more of a rover, which is suits his style more.
Yeah, sure.
Which, you know, when you're trying to, I think Oscar Pereja had a little bit of a conundrum whenever Diaz was healthy, just with the personnel that we had, trying to like fit him in there and mold the team around him. I don't think it quite fit as well as it used to. So, you know, it'll be definitely interesting to see what happens this summer.
Yeah, and with that, I don't want to bring fire here, but you know, there's definitely some yellow flags, and I don't want to say red flags because I haven't dug into it. But during you guys's, you know, really good run of spell, the underlying numbers weren't really great towards them, and they weren't very kind. And again, you win the games, and that's in the end all that anyone remembers. But looking towards the future, you know, there's a lot of people that like, okay, well, Dallas is going to struggle. And I think that's a popular pick just because, you know, you guys play in the summer down in the South. That's I've lived in the South. It's just sweltering at times. Yep. And I get that. And so the idea of the summer swoon, and it's coming and it's going to happen.
That
and
is the, so people, the narrative down here every summer.
Right. And while it's easy to kind of play into that narrative and say, and when they falter, and it's going to happen because every team goes through it. But when it happens, to kind of say, oh, I knew this was going to happen. We got rid of our best player. And this is really the idea is that right now you should be fixing those teams, because fixing the team to prevent that, because already the numbers don't look good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to be, you know, an alarmist. I don't want to be here and be like, oh, that dumb numbers guy said Dallas isn't going to make the playoffs. it's not about necessarily, you know, saying that there's some epic drop off coming, but rather trying to say, well, look, these numbers don't look good. We should try to fix them. And I think truly that they have, and that they are trying towards that. I just think they're doing it in the wrong way. And that's my opinion, being an outsider and not necessarily knowing what other dominoes are going to fall. I mean, you know, for weeks we've been saying what's going to happen to Chicago, and, you know, Alexander Katai gets re-signed today. And here the whole time, if they had waited to exercise, if they waited in June and exercised, they did not wait and exercised his option, purchase option in June, he would have counted as a DP for the season. And instead they waited 3 weeks, exercised it in July, and now he counts towards TAM for the rest of the season and a DP next year. So there are so many different dominoes and so many different card games and shell games going on that, you know, from the outside, we don't know all the details. You know, all these things aren't necessarily clear to us or transparent to us. So we can only speculate on what we see.
This is true.
What Dallas might be doing is they could have a lot of different other things set up. So it'll be really interesting to see how that, you know, changes over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and I think we'll see some action in the transfer market. I also think we'll continue to see Pareja being a lot more flexible this season, trying to figure out these things. And whereas last year it was kind of like he just stuck to his guns, and this season he seems a lot more willing to switch up formations and personnel all over the place. So, all right, well, thanks for joining us, Harrison. It was super interesting to hear about the data between Figueroa and Hollingshead. And everybody go to AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com. Check that out. And also, what is your Twitter? It is
Harrison_Crow.
Go check out Harrison and the American Soccer Analysis crew. Cheers, Harrison.
You were listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick.
Thanks to Harrison for making some time to come on. But that's going to do it for the show today. We'll be back next week with a recap of the week's matches, as well as any transfer business that gets done between now and then. In the meantime, football is not coming home, but luckily Dustin and I are both at home, and so we will be going to bed.
Yes, we're old and we like to sleep.
Indeed.
Well, I'm old. You're not old yet.
No.
Anyways, regardless, folks, check us out on Twitter. Check out our website, Dallas Soccer Show. And thanks for listening, everybody.